No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
Hello.
Good evening. That was, we're having a few technical problems tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'm on the phone. That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Good evening and welcome to Shadow Politics, a grassroots talk show that will try to shed a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's BBS Radio 1. We don't have a guest tonight, and we're having lots of technical difficulties, but we're here. So good evening and welcome, and let's talk. Kathleen, are you there?
Yes, the technical difficulty is that you're an old guy. That's
no, no, no. Look, there's some...
Yes, it is. You always
look,
get these problems.
The problem is that you came into town and you brought some virus from Arizona with you. You know, it's probably something that's shut down. Probably something that's been designed by conservatives.
You know what it's from?
To shut
it's
down
from
liberal
Mexican
talk
border.
Radio. That makes
it's
sense
from
to
the
me.
Mexican border, and it's all the diseases coming across. And
I
just thought
not
I'd bring
quieted.
It by the plane and give them back to D.C. so you can understand the real issues on the border. How's that?
Well, look, let me tell you people from Arizona something. The voice of freedom shall not be silenced. So
that, even
go.
If it has tuberculosis, it might if it gets tuberculosis.
Well, I know. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But first, let's talk about the good news with statehood. The new Columbia Admission Act was reintroduced by Eleanor Holmes Norton earlier this week, and she had 93 co-introducers. That's the most that we've ever had on this type of bill. So that's a good sign in the House. Of the 616 bills that were introduced this week, it put it in the top 1% in terms of how many co-introducers it had. So that's very hopeful. We're not going to get it passed in this Republican Congress at this point in this Republican
House. But what do you mean
House,
by 1%? That doesn't make any sense. You mean it, of all the bills introduced, it had the highest amount of co-sponsors? Co-signees?
It was in the top 1% of co-sponsors. So out of 616 bills that were introduced, there were only six bills out of 616 that had as many co-sponsors as we did. Potentially.
We got to make you politicians really clear when you get on to your statistical talking. Because it's
it's unfortunate that we're not going to have Ron Moten, who is somebody that we invited tonight, but he was busy, and we hope we'll have him in a future week. But, yeah, he did an article for the Washington Post today saying exactly that, you know. And
it was a great article. If anybody listening, which I know we have a huge base, wants to read this article, you know, you can go on to the Washington Post. It's in the local section. And he's really good. He talks about just that, how politicians use statistics to make everything sound good when in reality – they're not always as good as it sounds.
Yeah, and you know what? Well. Anybody that's ever taken, I took a graduate course in statistics and in political science, and, you know, you learn that very quickly that, the manipulation of data and the way you look at it really makes all the difference in what the outcome is. So, we have this concept that when you see a statistic, it really represents whatever position is being put forth because it's mathematical, you know, and math is science, right? It's magic. It's always correct. But,
right.
But yeah, as Ron points out, the way they look at crime. His particular article deals with crime. The way they look at crime gives us a false impression that things are getting better when they're actually not. And we certainly have that with unemployment. You know, how many people do we know that are unemployed that the unemployment is going down, but we know a lot of people have stopped looking for work, and so those numbers.
I want somebody in D.C. to do a study on how many people over 50 are underemployed or unemployed and then underemployed. Because that's
interesting because you and I know lots of people who are over 50 who are unemployed. And I don't know if that's because things have changed or you and I just hang out with a lot of losers.
I think things have changed.
I don't know.
I only hang out with good people.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, and so we certainly get that sense. Now, whether that's what's going on or not, whether that's actually happening, but it seems to be happening that many of us, you know, and the work environment has changed so much. Business environment in America has changed so much. I was telling you the other day that I took my son to a doctor appointment and I had to pay for my parking before I left. I'm sure many people out there have had to do this. You put your little ticket in a machine and you put your money in a machine and it comes out and then you go out the automated gate. And all I could think to myself is, Christ, you can't even get a job as a toll taker anymore. You know, because everything's being automated. So,
outsourced. That's the other thing, outsourced. I'm so tired. I do not have any prejudice against anybody from India or, you know, Pakistan or wherever else they get them, but I cannot stand calling the airlines. And in fact, I like to deal, I don't know, they both have them, but. You know, the impact when you just can't understand these people and they don't understand your problem, you know, and it's so outsourced everything, whether you call like for tickets or, you know, you want information or even I was calling about a credit report and I got somebody from India and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. They outsource them or they automate them. So, you know, what do they think is going to happen with America? What are we going to be?
I don't know. And
you know,
one thing that bugs me about outsourcing is when you have a local problem, you know. I mean, I felt that too, where, you know, my Comcast cable is problematic and I need to get something through the internet. And I'm talking to somebody in India and I understand they don't even understand what the situation is where I am, because how the hell can they? You know, there's 3 feet of snow, and you know what I mean? Whatever bulletins they're getting. But, yeah, and they say, well, we'll send somebody over to fix it. Well, from 10,000 miles away.
Well, not that we diverse, but let's get back on track when we were talking about this Ron Moten. Is that the correct way to say his name?
Yeah, but we really need to talk about statehood. And we got talking about the viruses that you brought with you from Kansas City. You know,
Kansas, don't blame Kansas. I have my fan base in Kansas, so watch out.
You know what?
I think they're listening.
Let me say something to you, Dorothy. You're not in Kansas anymore, okay? You and little Toto are here in the nation's capital, where we take things seriously. And seriously, this week with statehood, what else is going on? Really not much. I went to the mayor. Now I was reprimanded this morning in a meeting, in kind of a social meeting that I called the town hall meeting that occurred yesterday, the mayor's meeting. I was corrected by a member of the press that said it was not the mayor's meeting because it wasn't paid for by the city. And she wasn't even there. But the point of the matter is that her entire agenda was laid out in a nicely printed book and given out to everybody. And it really was kind of a dog and pony show. And unfortunately, it should have been more than that. It should have been, you know, they're trying to get input from people, but they're leading people in the direction that they want them to go. They only have them speak of certain issue areas. And the reason that this bothers me is that statehood wasn't an option on anything. They never talked about it. They never, you know, they never brought it up. It wasn't in any of the printed material. And one of the co-sponsors of the event was DC Vote, who's, you know, they're supposed to be about statehood. But sometimes I think it's just you and me, Kathleen, and, you know.
And a lot of people. It. I mean, the 207,000 people who voted for you. So
and the 207,000 people that voted for me. But where the hell are they? We need to get them out there. If you're out there, 207,000 people, please show up for the next. We have a meeting in Eleanor's office on Tuesday. Show up for that. If we could get 207,000 people to meet with Eleanor, I think we could change things.
Yeah, we. You know, you need those 207,000 people to also go up to the Speaker of the Senate and Speaker of the House and you know, sit in their offices for maybe a couple of days and get statehood. I think that so you had this thing yesterday, which I wasn't there, but there was something else that you've done this week that's pretty, you know, is new and interesting, right?
Well, we've just launched the coolest logo in the history of logos since
definitely cool.
Yeah, definitely cool. It's we're going to put it up on the internet for people. We'll put it on my Facebook page. We'll get it on our Santa Politics page. But we have a new logo for the for New Columbia. We decided, you know, that we need a new movement. We've had the old movement. Our movement goes back 213 years. So we've had a lot of movements. But this is the start of a new beginning for D.C. statehood. So we wanted a new logo. So we took the old 51 inside the star, and we upgraded it, turned it from a one-color logo in red to red, white, and blue so that people would remember that we've been a part of America since America began. We there's been people living in Washington, D.C. almost as long as there's been people anywhere in the United States. Who knows, maybe even longer. But we did it in red, white, and blue, and then we modified the star. We made it a shooting star to show the new energy that we feel in our movement. And we put New Columbia, 51st state, and 8 stars representing each ward of the city so that we could show our solidarity and we could affirm our solidarity and proclaim our desire to finally become equal citizens of the United States through D.C. statehood by becoming the state of New Columbia. So that's kind of exciting. And we've been giving the buttons out and people like them.
Yep. They definitely do. They're definitely cool, and it's a very nice logo, I must say. So as you said, this is the beginning of a new movement. Even though there are, you know, a lot of the movement before has just been the same old people doing the same old thing, relying on the city council for money, not getting very much. They do the same old every year, and it's got to stop. It's got to change, and I think we got to take it outside the box, way outside of the box, and get
part of the same old problem is that we're getting old, you know, the people that have been involved in this movement, and that's exactly one of the reasons that we designed this new logo, because it's time to pass the torch. We've lost, and we've talked on the show about this over the last few weeks, we've lost some real pioneers, some real important people in our movement over the last few years. And just recently, we lost Ed Guinan, who was the person that actually created my office through pushing a referendum for constitutional amendment. And, of course, shortly before that, we lost Marion Barry, who also was, you know, despite his bumps and bruises, he was a strong statehood supporter, and he was a well-recognized figure. So we're losing people in our movement. It's time to say to a younger generation, you need to take up this fight. And it's also time for us to say, look, We cannot pass this disadvantage on to our children. It's been passed on to us, and it's been passed down for generations and generations and generations. And it's gotten a little bit better in that now we get to vote for president, and now we have a city council. But it's time to end it. You know, democracy demands equality, and we're not equal in the District of Columbia. And until we are equal, we won't have a true democracy in this country. It affects us all. You know,
well,
Dr. King, this is the next thing we're going to talk about. Dr. King, right? Tomorrow's Martin Luther King Day. But as he said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and it really is. And a threat to our democracy.
I have to interrupt because, you know, you do have a co-host, and say to you that I think the problem, too, is that the people who have been doing this have been doing it the same old way. You needed those people to start it, but they keep on. Over the past 20 years, have you really seen anything different in what the movement has done?
Well, no, because you're right, because of the lack of resources, though. I mean, what can you do? Yeah, I mean, we've tried to do many creative things, from the billboards at the convention to the, you know, to this radio show, as a matter of fact. But the problem is, with a lack of resources, there's only so much you can do. And the people inside the Wilson Building understand that, and they keep us on a short leash because they really don't want us to accomplish, I think. And so, you know what, our fight has to turn... as strange as this seems, because they should be on our side, our fight has to turn against City Hall the same way we have to fight with Congress. We're going to have to fight with them. And if that's what we have to do, then that's what we have to do.
Well, we were speaking earlier, too, about the whole thing where, you know, people say, well, it'll never happen, and you're never going to get statehood. There were a lot of people who said you're never going to get civil rights, you're never going to be able to vote if you're African American. And, you know, government really didn't do it for that, made the change. I mean, the leaders stepped in, but it was the people and somebody like Martin Luther King, a preacher, who started to create that change. And I think that's kind of what has to happen. Somehow we have to find the trigger in D.C. to ignite people to want to have that change, and then be able to ignite the nation to support it, you know, because it's the people that make the change, not really the politicians or the government, I think.
Well, absolutely that has to happen. And you know, that's an important point about Martin Luther King, because I remember John Lewis, one of the great things that I've gotten to do was be involved in the dedication of the Martin Luther King Memorial here in the district, which everybody should come see. But John Lewis, at the speech opening the King Memorial, said that about him. He said this was a man that never got elected to anything. All he did was change the world, you know, but he was never elected to anything. He motivated people to get behind him and get this done, and that's exactly what we have to have. That's exactly what we've got to get done. We've got to get people to stand up. And you know, if we could get 150,000 people to show up on the West Lawn of the Capitol, I think we'd have statehood in pretty short order.
Yes, you would. It would definitely, and we need that kind of thing. So maybe the thing is that we've been talking, we have to go to the younger people, because we have to go to the youth that are going to have this future of what, wanting to go to war and lose your life for a country that doesn't give you representation, yet touts it that as if we are the democracy that has representation for everybody. So it's hypocritical.
So that's it, America. Kathleen and I will be out there. Now all we need is 149,998 other people.
148,000.
Yeah, 149,998 people to join us, and we'll get it done.
There we go.
And I promise you, if you show up, we'll have a button for everybody. How about that?
And I'll make tacos.
We'll take it out of Gomez's salary.
Yeah. And I'll make tacos, too, afterwards. Or we'll have, you know, some menudo or something.
Freedom
something like that.
Tacos. You can't go wrong with that.
It's
so,
true.
So, Yeah, that is exactly what we have to do. And as we get ready to celebrate Dr. King Day, and you know, and I don't want to make a big deal out of this because I don't want to hurt Kathleen's feelings, but it was Arizona that stood up against Dr. Martin Luther King Day, as they stand up against many things in Arizona. It's an unusual state, but they finally gave in. And as we get ready to celebrate his birthday, which is actually January 15th, but the day we celebrate it is the third Monday of January, so the date changes from year to year, but his actual birthday is the 15th of January. This is another thing about King that just always blows me away, especially now that I'm over 40. But he died at 39 years old. Yeah. Look at how much this man accomplished. He was 39. Yeah. It's just amazing what can be done. So when people say to me, oh, statehood will never happen, it's never going to happen, you know, I think and I say, well, I'm sure there were plenty of people in Birmingham that didn't think, you know, at the start of the bus boycott that so much would have happened, especially that you'd have an African-American president, you know, someday in the near future. So let's see what we can do.
Yep,
I think,
sounds good to me.
We've already done a few things, huh, Kathleen?
Yes.
Right? They weren't going to let us testify before the United States Senate. I mean, that was the best thing, that they weren't going to let me testify. And I can say this because Kathleen was sitting there and she was my witness, that the chief of staff, what did the chief of staff say to us?
No way. You're never going to get on.
No way you were going to testify.
That's right.
What she said. She said, we know we're going to have a hearing and we know for a fact you're not going to be there. But guess what? Surprise! We were there and we testified because that was the right thing to do, and they understood that. And
they only understood it after people called them. And this is where I go, because I think in D.C. it is definitely messed up thinking here. They forget who they work for. They're right here because our federal taxes pay their salaries. If we weren't paying those salaries, they wouldn't be in those jobs. None of them would be working for free like you. So it's like people, they just don't remember that. And people who work for them don't remember that. So all you got to go in with is common sense. And, you know, you guys work for us. That's just the way it is. And so, I mean, they didn't do the right thing because they thought, oh, well, this is the right thing. They did it after, for 2 days, they couldn't get any other work done.
Right.
And they figured, well, what the heck? Let them talk. It's not worth the trouble. You know?
I that's absolutely true. And you know, I think that that's not only the people in government, but I've got to tell you that I think that's a problem with America. And if you have an opinion about this and you're out there, please call in and let us know or Skype us, because, you know, I see it everywhere. I was in business for 25 years, and there was nothing within reason that a customer could ask me to do that I didn't do. But, you know, I constantly get that feeling when I deal with businesses, too, today, that I want to say to them, look, man, you wouldn't have a business if it weren't for me. So you need to have better customer service. I mean, I'm all the time. I used to say this thing about there was a particularly bad CVS pharmacy down where I lived, and I used to say, I always wanted to say to the people, look, if you're too good to work here, don't work here. But because they were just always surly and nasty, and they were never helpful, and you know, I think we all forget that we need each other. Businesses need customers, and politicians need voters. And so we should remind everybody from time to time that, hey, look, man, I pay the bills around here, not you. That's a big problem with politicians. Look, this we could go on about this all night, but we just reelected in Virginia. Virginia's got to be, you know, Arizona's not is going to lose their place as strangest political state in the United States, because Virginia's got to be right up there. They just reelected a guy who pled guilty to charges that amounted to him having sex with a minor. He was sentenced to jail. He resigned his office. His office resignation triggered a special election, which he ran in and won. And he was literally elected from his jail cell. He was in the jail cell.
Well, he was an independent, right? He ran as an independent, too. And it was a 17-year-old girl.
Independent?
Yes, he ran
because,
as an independent.
Yeah, because he was a Democrat.
And he resigned, and they wouldn't let him go back as a Democrat.
Right.
I mean, so,
right.
Yeah.
And he won. Now they're trying to decide what to do with him. What's more sacred?
The voters elected him, so they should just get off their high horse. And I know I saw that they want to block him from speaking.
Right.
It's not their decision. I mean, this is a problem with politicians get elected, even in a state legislature. They begin to think that they know better than the people. And as crazy as it is, and you may sit there and wonder, when the people vote and they elect somebody or they pass a referendum like the marijuana law in D.C., they voted for it, and that should be it. Then it's the politician's role to fulfill what that vote was. And that's what they decide, oh, no, you know what, that vote, that they didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't understand what they were voting for. So, no, we're not going to have that law go through, even though all my constituents voted for it. No. Or just because I'm a senator from wherever it may be, Texas or Maryland, and I don't like what those constituents did, doesn't give them the right to come in and then try to dictate their viewpoint. And that's what politicians mess up.
Well, and just from our standpoint, too, since you brought the subject up, that's another thing we should talk about, which happened this week, and that is that the chairman of the city council, Phil Mendelson, sent up, with the blessing of our delegate and the mayor, the law, the referendum. And their feeling is that it's going to pass because the budget that is interfering with this, the budget amendment, the omnibus, or what we're calling the cromnibus budget amendment, says that no funds can be expended to implement laws that would be contrary to federal drug laws. And they're saying no new laws, to create new laws. And they're saying since the referendum was passed in November, on November 2nd, and the cromnibus wasn't passed till December, that means that the Initiative 71, the marijuana initiative, is not a new law, so the cromnibus doesn't affect it. But they forget that the Constitution of the United States says to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever, which means that every law, there's a waiting period for every law on Capitol Hill, in the District of Columbia, on Capitol Hill, and until that waiting period expires, what we're calling a law isn't actually a law. So I don't think it's exempted. I think they're wrong. I think they're going to find this out, and I think if Congress doesn't overturn the law, or if they allow it to proceed without a considering that it's not violating the law, I think this will go into court. I think Andy Harris from Maryland and other people who are against the initiative becoming law will take this up in court, and I think we'll be fighting this for several years. Not something that Washington had to do, not something that Colorado had to do, because they're states. So this is just another reason to become a state. And somebody wrote a letter, right, Kathleen, of the Post today?
You know, yes, they did. They did just about that. And just that, you know, the other argument that I always raise, and she rose, was that the Republicans don't want D.C. to be a state because they figure it's going to be a Democratic one. That's not a reason to deny people representation because you're afraid it's going to be a certain party.
Right.
I mean, who the heck? To me, that's total... it's not an ego. It's arrogance beyond belief that, you know...
Yeah, it really, really is to, you know, I think there are times, you know, that you've got to suck it up and say, look, you know, this is not particularly good for our party, but, you know, and that's the, but it's the right thing to do. You know, that's the thing, that there is a limited amount of resources. I remember when I first studied economics 101, the definition of economics was the study of the allocation of scarce resources among alternative uses. So they assume right off the bat that there's not enough to go around. Well, that's true in democracy, too. When you give rights to one group, maybe you take a little from another group, but that doesn't matter. It's necessitated by democracy. You have to do that in order to have a healthy democracy. And the sooner the Republicans in Congress realize that, the better off we'll be. But they just see it as, it doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong. It's just, we don't want to give any leverage to the other team. And that,
well,
you know,
and this is where politicians have really messed us up, because there was a time where they got elected by their party. That's definitely, they were going to promote the party's interests, but that didn't mean that they didn't listen to their constituents who are of another party, or just their constituents. I mean, it's got to go back to the point when once you get elected, doesn't matter if you got elected by a landslide on the Republican Party, whatever, you still represent those other people who lost. And your job is to represent everybody. It's not just to represent your party. And that's what I don't understand, because I don't remember reading and studying political science, and there was never that aspect of it, but that's what it's become. And that's why they screwed up this country, because it's not about doing the best for everyone. Once you get elected, fucking put your party aside, and you sit there and you do the best for the people. And I mean, and that's where it becomes black and gray, because I may feel a certain pathway is best for everyone and they elected me and I do that job, then it becomes, well, you know. And sometimes you have to go against your party to do the right thing. In your heart of hearts.
I mean, I think we have to take responsibility as citizens too. So many of us have dropped out. Here we are in the nation's capital, for example, and in the last election, in the general election, I mean, in the primary, like 20% of the people voted. In the general election, maybe 35%. I mean, a third of the people that are registered, and then there's all the people that aren't registered. So, you know, when you've got 15 or 20% of the people who are eligible to vote making the decisions, we have to take some responsibility for that too. I mean, how long does it take, man, to go out there and cast a vote, to pick up a newspaper every once in a while and try to keep up with what's going on, try to have an informed opinion? I mean, it's crazy that so few people vote, and even here in District Columbia, you know, where we should, everybody should vote. But we don't promote that as much. I don't know what it is. Both of my kids voted, but I brought them to it, you know. And, my parents were both gone by the time I turned 18. I was eligible to vote. So, but we were motivated. I mean, I remember it was like getting a driver's license, you know, registering to vote. I mean, I did it right away. And I voted, me and four other people voted for George McGovern and that year. And, you know, I remember having to register so we could vote against Richard Nixon. Yes! You know? But,
can you do me a favor?
Yes.
Can you give the number of the show to call in? Because I know there should be people out there who are thinking of calling a question. It can be anything, even though we are talking about statehood. But what is our number again to call in?
The number to call in, and I'm glad you asked, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype your brilliant question to BBS Radio 1. Do you want to take a break and play our song and give people time to think about this and call in? Or
I'm thinking it's already 7:41, so maybe we'll just play out with the song that we chose.
Okay,
for
maybe we'll do that. So call in, because Kathleen's running out of things to say,
No, never. I just actually been cutting myself from saying things because I didn't want us to diverse too much. But let's talk about tomorrow.
Tomorrow, the parade.
The parade.
We're going to be in a parade. With
Martin
the hip-hop
Luther King
band.
Parade.
Yeah. I'm going to have to climb up on a flatbed truck. I'm probably going to need some help.
We're going to have to lift you up. But tell them what's different. I mean, we're on the what? We're on the... hip-hop.
Oh, we're on the hip-hop float. Yes. Well, see, that's different for you. But I've always been hip.
I think you've been more hop than hip, but that's...
Yeah, maybe that's it. You know what? I've got to confess that I said... I was in an argument with my daughter, Trisha, one night about how cool I was, because she thinks I'm totally uncool. And I said, you know what? I've always been hip or something like that. And she just shook her head and looked at me and said, that's the most pathetic part, is that nobody said hip in, you know, like 30 years. She's like, who are you? Who are you, Frank Sinatra? You're hip?
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, but we're going to be hip, and both my daughters are hip-hop dancers. Of course, neither one of them will be there, but yes, but I'm going to dance on the float. Hopefully, I'll embarrass my children.
I think I'm
going to
take it. I'm going to video that and put it on. Yeah. Like we'll put it on something
YouTube.
And send it out there for the world to see. But I think it's a great idea. I think being on the hip-hop is exactly where we need to do. I mean, you know. Hopefully, you know, the youth will ask and wonder. And actually, I've found in several things that we've gone to that the youth know exactly about what's going on when it comes to statehood and therefore very much for it. I just don't know if they know how to channel that interest and that desire because I don't think they even, not that you have to teach that, but I don't think they teach those kinds of things anymore. Like, you know, how to express yourself or, you know, how to go to and speak to a lawmakers. I mean, they're so, you know, we've talked about education a lot, but it's just so geared to the test. For instance, I have to say this. My son, Mateo, was writing a thank you to his godmother, Kathy Compton, in Texas. And so I assumed he knew how to write a letter because I thought they still taught that. Remember, didn't they, you know, where you put your addresses and how it's supposed to be.
Exactly. The address
right?
The salutation.
And the salutation and the address and where the zip code and all that. So he writes the letter and I give him the envelope and I walk away and I come back and I look and I think, well, that's really strange. And I walk away and I come back and I said, is this how you think you address a letter? Because what it was, he had written from the very edge of the left side on the very top. He had written everything in lines underneath each other, like, you know, Kathy Compton address and then from, you know, Mateo Vlasic, blah, blah, blah. He had never written a letter before or knew how to do his address in the top left and the salutation in the middle and how and where the zip code should go. And I was shocked. And I thought, is this something I should have taught him? But you assume like in high school, we did that in typing. It was throughout what we did. Remember, we all wrote a letter somewhere and you learned how to do the letter. And I was just... And my mother and I actually really laughed hard. And then I felt really bad because I don't think they're teaching them that kind of stuff. Like, what do you do when you know that there's a cause or you know that there's something wrong? How do you go about getting involved and changing? I mean, there are places that do that. But as a whole, I don't think we teach kids that anymore. So
yeah,
I think it's great we're on the hip-hop float. I think it's fantastic.
Well, and I think that, you know, this is an issue that young people get. For two reasons. One, it's really not that hard a thing to understand. You know, it's not a very technical issue. It really is forms the basis of our democracy that you shouldn't be taxed and not represented, you know, taxation without representation. So they get it. And two, it's really what they think about a lot, you know, because you've raised kids, right? And fairness is a very big thing to them. And they understand that. Like, you know, I remember my kids fighting over, you know, she got two cookies and I only got one, you know, even if they didn't like the cookie. But so fairness is a big issue to young people. And they see the hypocrisy in society. And so they relate to this, that everybody's treated one way and we're treated another. And that's not fair.
Right. Exactly.
So I think it is an issue they get. And Plus which, there's something about young people, they like to see an old fat white guy dance. And that's what I did last time. I fat guy on the float. I was uh-huh. dancing. I like to see old people try to dance, I think.
Please, America, can you imagine that's what I'm going to have to be looking at for an hour and a half, 2 hours as I walk
something.
Behind the float? I'm going to have to look up and see.
Let me tell you something. Oh, I'm a Vic Domic dance school graduate.
Oh, excuse me. Who used to go dancing with you when we were young? And I had to literally, I mean, it was painful for me to, but I did it because my father always told me I should dance with whoever asked me. But oh,
I didn't ask you. You drugged me out on the floor. I never asked.
No, that never happened.
We were
like
forced
that.
To dance with you. And that was it. That's why we limped. That's why me and Bob Hirschfeld limped. So you would give us a break and let us go sit down. You know, it's not that
anyway,
we couldn't dance.
Don't fool America. You are definitely a white man trying to dance hip hop.
Oh, my God. I was the best. What I can't even remember what kind of dancing Patty and I swing dancing. I was the best swing dancer. I almost got a scholarship. So that's what I'll have to do. I have to do swing dancing to the hip hop. wait till you see my robot. You will like. Yeah, you won't believe it.
Snake.
In fact, just for the sake of honesty and transparency in government, both my daughters who are hip hop. Dancers once tried to get me to sign a document that said that I agreed I would never dance in public.
Or with them, around where they are in public.
They felt it would reflect badly on their reputation as professional dancers. So, but I don't think I'm that bad, man. We'll see.
We'll see. I'll take a video now, and next week I'll let you guys let the audience know where it's posted, and you can take it.
Yeah,
we can have a little test, you know, see how many people vote for you that you did okay.
That's exactly right. We could have a hip hop off.
There you go.
Right.
So we're going to be there with our logos and giving out pins, right? With
the
new logo,
buttons, the new buttons. It'll be cool. If you're in Anacostia tomorrow, make sure you come out for the parade, which starts at noon, and it starts at St. Elizabeth's and goes to Lucky Elementary School, which is all on Martin Luther King Boulevard. So if you're around tomorrow, come out for the 8th. This is the 8th annual parade, it ought to be a lot of fun.
And I think it should be a good day.
Huh?
I think the weather should be nice.
Yeah, the weather's supposed to be nice, a little on the brisk side, a little breezy. There's going to be lots of marching bands. We're going to have several high school marching bands there, and there's going to be celebrities and speeches, and, you know, there'll be the national racing presidents. We have this thing at Nationals Park. Have you seen this, Kathleen? Where we have four presidents that are made out of paper mache, and they're all about, I don't know, about 7 feet tall, and they race around the bases during the seventh inning at every baseball game. And I think so far Thomas Jefferson has won the most, but it's Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, and there's a fourth one. I can't remember who the fourth one is. Maybe George Washington. George Washington. So, they put Teddy Roosevelt in there because they needed a Republican, you know. they had Abraham Lincoln. So they've got two Republicans, one Democrat, and one guy nobody knows what party he was with. Can't remember what party George Washington was with. But anyway, so that's tomorrow, and that ought to be a lot of fun. And we hope you all come out for that. And next week, we hope to have an interesting, exciting guest and carry on our conversation about statehood and other important things.
You what we're doing, you know, our new steps, because we plan to, the next 90 days, we're going to try to work it hard and get something going and sustain it.
And we have a lot of interesting things coming up. You know, maybe we can get somebody from the Elizabeth Warren camp to talk about her candidacy. Who's going to be the Democratic candidate? Is it going to be Hillary? Wouldn't it be interesting to have a primary election? This would be, I would think, in either party, an election where you would have two women that were contenders, right? You've never had that before. So, you know, Elizabeth Warren versus Hillary, how would that, what would that do, and what would happen to the women vote?
Well, you know, I don't know.
The women vote is considered a block, right?
Right. And I would tell you that I've always been an Elizabeth Warren supporter from, you know, several years back. And I feel more comfortable with her than I do with Hillary. And I just, unfortunately, and it's a really terrible thing, but I have been pretty much across the country and have yet come across men of all age groups, of all different diverse backgrounds, who like her. And even though it's they don't like her. I mean, who don't like her, who just don't like her to the point where they just deem red. And I mean, it's, I can't, besides maybe you and a few people I know inside DC, I can tell you that whether I'm in Arizona, California, Kansas, Texas, which I've been, you know, kind of have relatives everywhere, and I've talked to a lot of people throughout the country. I can't tell you of, I can tell you this, men do not like her with a passion. And of the women?
Because they're threatened by her.
Well, maybe so, but there's something that I don't really like either, and I don't know what it is, and I can't put my finger on it.
You're threatened by her too.
I'm not threatened, but maybe I just don't like a lot of the people who work for her, and that's always telling to me of a candidate is the people who work for them and what, how those people act. So, okay, I'm on the record. That's another reason why I don't like her. So, you know,
you can beat me later. You got in fights with a lot of those people.
Because what?
You got in fights with a lot of those people.
Listen, I go way back to when they were nothing either. And I've got just as much on them as they would think they would ever have on me. They don't have anything on me. But I'll tell you, I don't like a lot of them. And I think they do anything. And that's what I like about whether it's a Democratic or Republican politician. I don't like this thinking that it doesn't matter, whatever it takes to get the vote and the count that makes you win is what's important. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's not about the means to the end.
I think you have that with a certain, I think you have that feeling that you're expressing with like any inside candidate. You know, there's always something about an outside candidate that always makes them more interesting and more exciting with more energy. And certainly Elizabeth Warren is that. She's the outside candidate, and Hillary Clinton represents the inside candidate, just like you know, Jeb Bush would, or you know.
Right. And maybe that's why I like, because I don't ever have like the insiders.
You're anti-establishment. You're a troublemaker.
Hey, listen, we've got about five more minutes, so we may want to like figure out.
So let's say goodbye. Yes, let's say goodbye, and we'll hope that you'll tune in next week, because we want to play this this song in honor of Dr. King. Our movement is a civil rights movement. He, of course, was a great civil rights leader. So I'll let Kathleen have the last word, and then we'll play out with Stevie Wonder's tribute to Dr. King.
Yes, and thanks to everyone. We're really excited about the new year. We have some great guests. I'm back in D.C. I'm ready to hit the streets, to fight for the cause. And to my two friends in Kansas who are going to call in with very important questions, you guys are chicken. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So to the rest of them, our listening audience, thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week. We're going to have a great guest. And remember, it's not about the sales tomorrow. It's about what Martin Luther King stood for.
Right.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.
give the people their right to vote.